Welcome to another episode of the After the Whistle podcast. Once again, it's a one-on-one episode featuring me, Smiley, and Van Gelder. Again, it looks like a lot of people have a lot of things going on in life, but the two of us, it looks like we have the least going on in life at the moment. So, Charlie, we are here again for you.
if only they knew.
You know, we say we don't get anything due, but we get at least due. So here we are,
ready
to serve you guys once again.
Charlie.
So yeah, Charlie, let's just jump right into it. It's been a long weekend of football action. And we are going to start with some controversy that happened over the weekend. It wasn't actually to do with the match, but the aftermath of a match. When in a Sky Sports show, they were talking about Salah's chances of winning the Ballon d'Or. And Jamie Carragher passed a few comments that have seemed to rile up Africans all over the continent.
I think the fact he's probably with Egypt and he's probably not playing in the major tournament as such, or maybe got a great chance of winning. I think it's either the Champions League or the major tournament. Normally the player who excels in that. You know, you're looking at sort of Vinny Jr., Mbappe right now, Real Madrid looking really good, going for the Champions League. Liverpool will be in that conversation. But right now, he's certainly the front runner. And Roy, what you've just said then in terms of getting maybe more trophies and league titles, that could actually put him above probably Kenny Dalglish and Steven Gerrard in sort of where he ranks in terms of Liverpool legends, because I think right now he's right on their shoulders.
To say AFCON is a major tournament, because a lot of people will be at home saying people are not taking that. Say, AFCON is a major tournament, just so you don't...
No, but Egypt are not going to win the World Cup, are they?
No, but AFCON is big, wasn't it? Remember when him and Mane was going for it in the league? I'm just saying that.
No, it's a fact.
Put you in your place.
It's a fact. If you're in the Euros or you're in the Copa America, it's deemed to be big, so the AFCON's in the same level.
So basically, a lot of people are furious. They are fuming because, not just because of his comments, but the dismissive way in which he reacted to Michael Richards and Daniel Sturridge talking about how AFCON is a major tournament. Mangiora, what do you think about this?
I'll start by saying, how do you know what a major tournament is when you've never won one before? But that'd be cool. That'd be all you know. Look, the last AFCON was better than the last Euros in terms of entertainment value, suspense, quality of football. It was better than the last Euros. So this, every time then they try to do Euros is the ultimate. Fine, they have the best facilities and they usually pioneer like some of the best kind of like football style of play and stuff like that. That'd be cool. Nobody that denies the Euros is a very high quality tournament. But there's a very dismissive and disrespectful way that Europeans like to talk about the AFCON, that they don't associate to that other competition where they South America or North America or whatever, wherever that one day, where then they play them almost every year. No? And even that one is less competitive than the AFCON, because the number of high-level countries in there that can actually win it is actually very few, right? At the end of the day, it be opinion where it did within the footballing circles. First of all, it starts from the fact that AFCON is played in January. And for most of them, that is a nuisance. Because if they worry like maybe them are teams or them are club or whatever. Imagine if, for instance, Chelsea was in a title race and then Cole Palmer left for Euros or something like that. Chelsea fans would be fuming. Like, hey, our best player left, what to go do? Then kind of things. So I understand sometimes to an extent, but that does not demean or bring down the value of the competition. Michael just said to him, AFCON is a major tournament. Then he said, but Mo Salah is not going to win the World Cup. It's like saying that Premier League is a big tournament. Then he said, yeah, but he's not going to win the Champions League. What's that got to do with anything? What's that got to do with anything? AFCON is a major tournament. And for us as Africans, that is our Euros. For us as Africans, that is our, what do they call the one they play, you know, for South America. That'd be one of Copa America. For us, like if you ask, look at the quality of African players that are Premier League legends that have played in the AFCON, who, if you ask them in your total career, what trophy didn't you win or what was one of your major disappointments? Most of, like Didier Drogba, sad. I wanted to win the AFCON. You ask Samuel Eto'o, my best AE was winning the AFCON. You ask Yaya Toure, sad, I couldn't win the AFCON. Like, sometimes they talk as if because it's in Africa and it's AFCON, we don't want to waste our time. Look at how long it took for channels like Sky Sports and BBC Sports to start covering the AFCON. It took years. It was only in the last edition or the last two editions of AFCON that they've even had the opportunity. They've tried to, you know, try to incorporate it into their programming. All the other times, it was a nuisance competition that was taking away the best players from Europe to go and play in the obscure place of Africa, and then they will come back injured or whatever, and all manner of things. I remember that season that Sadio Mane won against Mo Salah, and Liverpool were treating Sadio Mane like this, like that. If it wasn't a major competition, they wouldn't have minded, and they would have given the guy a cake. What did they do? They didn't give him a cake. They didn't give him a cake. They didn't celebrate him. In fact, they tried to bring Mo Salah back, and it's not the first time. We've heard Jurgen Klopp pass similar comments. We've heard other managers, other pundits pass similar comments. There is a fundamental disrespect of AFCON that absolutely has to end. There's a fundamental disrespect of AFCON that has to end. Like, there's nothing anybody can tell me, because the Euros, you know, it's not like right now they are playing some exceptional football. Look at the last Euros. No, just look at the last Euros. No fun. It wasn't even good. The good team that you take, look at Mbappe, the whole Euros, he didn't even score. Then he got injured, then he left. Well, look at the AFCON last year. Kele Baba, Kele Baba, Kele Baba. The time Nigeria, then J Nigeria. See the way the whole Africa they enjoy. See the way as Ivory Coast win, then Ghana itself, we get half day holiday, we do Soloku for streets. Every time if England go play something, it's coming home. You never they come home. I don't blame them. If you've not won a major trophy as a national team side for more than 60 years, everybody else doing something great will annoy you. It's just envy. He, Jamie Carragher, he wishes that he won either the World Cup or the Euros with England. But he had absolutely nothing to show for it, playing at the highest level of English football. So this is all that he can see. If he plays in a major competition, he's playing in the Premier League, he's playing in the Champions League, he's the captain of Egypt. What else does he have to do? What else does he have to do? Sorry. I hand over to you.
So I'm going to try at least to try and see things from his perspective or try to
there's
rationalize
no perspective
what he's
see. There's no perspective
I'm, but,
to see.
I'm still
there's
going to
no
try
perspective
regardless.
To okay, try.
I'm,
try
going to get, I'm going to try regardless. I'm looking at the conversation, and I think I'm trying to put it in the context of what they were discussing. What they were discussing was basically Salah's chances of winning the Ballon d'Or and why he might be overlooked. So it was in that context where he said AFCON is not a major competition. First of all, I'd like to believe that he wasn't using his words the way he intended. I think what he meant to some extent is that in terms of the weight of AFCON when considering people for the Ballon d'Or, it doesn't carry as much weight as the Euros or the Copa America. So for example, if, say, Mbappe scores 50 goals in a season, Salah also scores 50 goals in a season. Salah wins AFCON, Mbappe wins the Euros. I feel like to some extent, Mbappe's case for the Ballon d'Or would be considered greater than Salah's case.
Yeah, because
to a large
it's racism.
Extent.
It's racism.
It's racism. Whether it's racism, we are not talking about what it should be. We are talking about what it is. So
it is
the thing
racism.
Is,
yes. Racism.
So for me, I think that what he meant was that by virtue of playing in the AFCON instead of, say, the Euros or the Copa America, Salah's chances of winning the Ballon d'Or might be lower than somebody else who was playing in the Euros for a huge nation.
Wherein I understand where you're coming from. Sorry, I understand where you're coming from. But Salah can't help where he's born. He can't
exactly.
help what his nation is.
As for this argument.
See, Erling Haaland, on board Eurostar, on board World Cup. But people still find a way to say he's either the best number nine in the world right now or top three best number nine in the world. Why? Because he does well in the Premier League and he does well in the Champions League. But he's never... So you have to tell me that if Haaland plays a fantastic season, scores maybe 80 goals a year. I don't know. He go free do the robot. But imagine in a season, he scores 80 goals across all competitions, Premier League, FA Cup, everything. They win the Premier League. They win the FA Cup. They win the Champions League. But he doesn't qualify for Euros. They will tell us that because he didn't qualify for Euros and someone else qualified for Euros or qualified for Ballon Copa America, that person will have a weightier thing to say against the back. It'd be racism. It'd be pure and simple. If Salah go machine for machine. No, listen. If he and Salah go machine for machine, where them all score 80 goals in a season across all competitions. And then Salah goes to AFCON, wins the AFCON, comes back, wins other trophies. And then let's say, maybe Salah win Premier League, but El Haaland Debs win Champions League, right? We say Man United win FA Cup, where they don't win any other trophy. But Salah win AFCON and the Premier League. Haaland win, say the Champions League and say the FA Cup. And then they give it to, then they will say, oh, because he won the Champions League and because he won this, it'd be pure racism. Racism.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Whether it's racism or not, that one, that's a different conversation altogether. But in terms of like what would give you more gravity to win the Ballon d'Or, I do think that if maybe Haaland were to win the Champions League and Salah was to win the AFCON, they would probably put more weight on Haaland's Champions League win instead of the AFCON, because they'll just, in terms of maybe weight of competitions, it's probably Euros here, World Cup here, Champions League here, AFCON and Asian Nations League and whatever it is, they regard those ones on a lower level. It's kind of like how in general, when you are talking about the major competitions in general, major European competitions, you know that the Champions League is considered a major competition by category. Europa is also considered a major competition. Even the Conference League is also considered a major competition. It's not about opinion. It's like when you win it, it's considered a major competition. But the Super Cup is considered a minor competition. In the same way, the Community Shield is also considered a minor competition.
Because
Champions League, let me finish. Mm-hmm. Even though the Champions League and Europa are considered major competitions, like we know say major competition day and major competition day, nobody they regard the Champions League and the Europa on the same level, even though they are both considered major competitions. And it's in that same way that the AFCON and Euros are both major competitions. But in general, like there's a general difference.
I can understand that, and I can even admit to it that based on, say, production quality of facilities, and even maybe in terms of general respect, like one be boss, like, one be junior boss. I get it. But for me, it's the fact that because players like Lionel Messi and others played in the Copa, some way, somehow, they also regard the Copa almost at the same level as the Euros. But some way, somehow, say Kof Djibouti then since they AFCON, all of a sudden, they know they consider. Meanwhile, if you take some of the teams of AFCON and you go and play in Copa America, then go free show something for there. Madagascar Dems, then go free show something small. Comoros, go free go show something small for there. Nobody go free change my mind. Rwanda then things. Congo, then go free go show something for there. So for me, if you want belittle, then treat some. Like for instance, it's like how for a long time, AFCON and the Copa had the same number of spots for the World Cup. Meanwhile, Copa, the teams for inside are less. Ghana self, if we go play Copa, we self in this our stage. We actually, never mind. We know if you do anything. But my point is, this fundamental disrespect doesn't stem from the competition. It stems from the views of people, of the people that play in that competition. It be pure racism, because nobody will tell me say Euros. Let's say Euros is the pinnacle of national team football outside of the World Cup, right? Continental competitions, Europe is number one. Fine, I can understand that. Then you go tell me say maybe number two is Copa. Come on, come on. Let's be honest. Let's tell the truth, man. Let's tell the
you
truth.
You see, me, I understand the point about the racism and the I understand everything. But also, it's like we don't do ourselves any favors. Because in the end, you wouldn't find players pulling out of those other competitions to focus on their club, even though there's a difference in the because of the time period where it's played and all of that. But if we are also contributing to it to some extent, if our players are pulling out of AFCON because they want to focus on their club, if our players are pulling out of AFCON because they don't want to risk their
but
club
isn't
career,
that isn't that
end,
from
it lends credence to whatever arguments they are making.
I can understand that, but that is purely...
You hardly see players doing that for the Asian Nations League. For the record.
But that is because the quality of the production and the quality of the facilities is a major problem. Nobody wants to go and play for their national team and come back injured. How many players have even played for, say, Ghana? Come and play for national team Ghana. And then they've got one or two injuries. In the end, I get it that if your own players don't take it seriously, then other people too won't take it seriously. But I'm always taking the last two AFCONs. The one, I think the last one was in Cameroon, and after Cameroon, we went to Cote d'Ivoire, right? These last two AFCONs, because the quality of the pitches and everything have been 100%, nobody is pulling out anywhere. Except if you are Ghana players. That one, then they take injured players come. But
Are you sure it's not going to happen again?
I don't think so. This year, they are going to Morocco. Do you know the fantastic quality of pitches?
I mean, Ghana will go home, but like, you know, just then Thomas Partey and things, they're not going to find some calf injury or something.
No. See, for instance, even for Ghana, regardless of how the way we shine and everything, this crop of national team players, all of them want to win the AFCON because since when? The last time that Ghana won, when was the last time Ghana won the AFCON? 40 years. Since I was born, I've never seen my country win a major trophy so that we can all go to the streets and be doing soloku the whole night, and the next day will be declared Independence Day, and the next day also be declared National Holiday. I've never seen it before. Even when we qualified for the World Cup for the first time in 2006, I remember we had half the... We used to be a nation. It's okay. Let's not talk about... Let's move on for AFCON, because if I think about AFCON, then at the Kai how we don't qualify, but the coach still be there. Then go change, go take some...
It's used. Anyway, moving on, still on the topic of Salah and the Ballon d'Or and everything. What do you think his chances are of actually winning the Ballon d'Or? Because in the past, like until the past month, it seemed to me like he was the obvious, like he was by far the front runner. But you have to consider the fact that now Mbappe starts pick up steam. And even based on these arguments we've been having, Salah, by virtue of who he is, where he's coming from and everything, he probably has to do twice as much to win the Ballon d'Or than say an Mbappe. Mbappe, if he just finishes the season well, Ballon d'Or it'd be French football award. They go rig the team for Mbappe giddy. So, like, what do you think Salah's chances are of actually winning the Ballon
d'Or? Look, we don't use 1 month of football to prove that you have won Ballon d'Or. It's not 1 month of football. It's your whole body of work across the season. We were all here when he was missing tappings. We were all here when every week you get a penalty and he will still miss. Yes, the talent is obvious and he can do it and he can make it. And now he's settling into Real Madrid. But the work that Salah has done this season, I'm not even a Liverpool fan. Also, I'm a Hazard fan. But if somebody does something good, Osayi, Massa, the ball that Salah has played this season, no player in the whole world has played the kind of football that Mo Salah has played this year. No, let's just look at the numbers alone. 30 goals, 20 assists. 30 goals. Maza, let's not play.
I think I saw a stats that said he's the first player since Messi in the 20... He's the first player since Messi in how many years to score an assist, to both score an assist in more than 10 games in the same season. Something, there's a stats like that.
He's the first player since Yadabo and then Atapapa. Those two hideous strings. Since they ruined football for us by taking us to mass level. Lionel Messi had 100 and something goal contributions in a season. Then see, Ronaldo also had 60 something. I think 65, 67, something like that. Since those two, this guy is next.
Okay, let me ask you. Let me ask you this.
Mm.
Assuming Liverpool win the Premier League,
mm-hmm.
but Real Madrid win the Champions League and La Liga, who do you think will win the Ballon d'Or?
They'll give it to Mbappe. And that one is not based on the fact that he has been the better player. It will be based on pure national pride. Our boy has won.
Let me make it more difficult, because if I see Mbappe winning the Champions League and La Liga, I don't want to go give him too much weight. What if both Real Madrid and Liverpool don't win the Champions League, but they both win their leagues, then who do you think is going to win it?
Then the winner is clear. As I'm sitting here today, myself, if you take me, I go free drive, go Liverpool, you know, far. It'll be like 2 hours. I go drive, then take, go give him for a house. You know, far. The winner will be Mohamed Salah, the king of Liverpool. It's simple. That guy has overtaken Stevie Gerrard as a legend. He has overtaken, what be the other, get some other name. Oh, Fowler. He has overtaken Rob Fowler. Massa, in terms of...
Rush and all of those people.
Massa, all of them, this Carragher thing, they talk, it be sake of Gerrard being boy. That be why he talk, he's now at their shoulders. Massa, oh boy. Let's not lie. Mo Salah has won one Champions League, I think, with Liverpool. He's won Club World Cup. He's won Super Cup. He's won
League. He's won the Premier League, which Gerrard never did.
Massa, he's about to, this season, he go win him again. And if, as he win him, if he like making him win World Cup, Champions League, sir, after he has won the Premier League, he has automatically overtaken Steven Gerrard. Me, I'm not hearing it. I'm not a Liverpool fan. I'm a Chelsea fan. Everybody know this. I'm a Hazard fan. I'm not saying if you come total pure football, my boy there in front, make Salah go day somewhere. I don't enjoy watching Musala play. But the truth there, it be one. And that truth is that this season, 2024-2025, Mohamed Salah from Egypt has been the best player in football this year. Nobody go feature in my mind. See, if it is like make from today, make you no score again after the end of the season, Seth. How many, do you know how many goals Mbappe must score and assists he has to give to overtake Mo Salah? Answer. Let's be serious.
Anyway, me, I actually do agree with that, because Salah, for me, he's been playing Ballon d'Or football like since day one of the season. So, for
me, if it doesn't go to him, as he cut in here, he go unlock new Samsung this. Hey.
And even the fact that he has to even fight for a new contract at Liverpool, always have to go in the media and throw certain comments and all of that, for me, it's very embarrassing for Liverpool, because Salah has also shown that he's a sort of player who he can extend his career just by adapting. Because how Salah is playing today is not how he was playing 5 years ago. He's adapted his game a lot to become more of a playmaker while retaining his ability to score goals. So for me, they shouldn't be thinking that, okay, maybe if we give him another 3 years or something, he go fade away or something. I see Salah as the Lewandowski, the Ronaldo type, that they've taken care of themselves so well and they've adapted their game so well that he'll be able to play like past his mid-30s, probably going to his like 36, 37 before he starts tailing off. So yeah, Salah for Ballon d'Or, definitely. But speaking of winning trophies and all of that, over the weekend we saw Arsenal losing to West Ham. And you know, before this weekend, there was a lot of optimism from the Arsenal camp, because it looks like, or it looked like, Liverpool had gone into a rough patch. They had dropped points against Aston Villa during midweek. They also have a very tough run of games to end the season. So Arsenal fans kept saying that Liverpool, even if they're 10 points ahead, Vim still did. Right? I look like everything scattered. Like, do you think Arsenal have bottled this? Even though they were, bear in mind that they weren't in the lead. But
everything like, scatter. Scatter. Everything scatter. What's that? Where my bottle day? Yeah, I forgot. I go send the bottle to you. Maza, I'm not surprised. They are from North London. It's in their blood. It's in the water over there. It's a North London thing. Bottle things. when we were coming into this season, and let Arsenal fans not come and say, oh, but we're never in the league. Maza, when we're coming to this season, everybody said, this is your year. If you know win, and we don't care what you do in the last 5 years. In fact, it's not even 5 straight because the first 2, 8, 8. But yeah, Maza, how can you tell me this? You have your manager for the longest. Look, sometimes people forget. They spent Ahi on Calafiori, Marino, and other players in the summer. They brought in 2 hugely talented young players in Wanyeri and Miles Lewis Kelly, a.k.a. R. Skelly. Make them calm the team inside. Liverpool didn't buy a single player. The only player they had credit, then go who I beg, Charlie, Juve, I beg. Yeah, give me, you hit, Chiesa hit, but you take him. We've not even seen Chiesa properly in the Premier League this season. And on top of that, they had lost their talismanic and iconic manager in Jürgen Norbert Klopp. Where then go take Arno Slot tickets here come from? They say, actually, they come, say, we all really laugh. We say, oh, take off that other bald guy from Eredivisie. We say, oh, Eredivisie managers, almost sad. They're no good. And then the season started, and Liverpool were winning, Arsenal were winning, Chelsea was winning, Man City was winning, and the city started to wobble. But Liverpool weren't losing or anything. Therefore, some weird reason, Arsenal too started to wobble for no reason. Nobody can tell me that these people have not bottled the league. This is the year they were supposed to win it. This one. Anything can happen between now and the end of the season. They may turn it around and win it. But as I'm sitting here today, the 24th of February at 8:11 p.m., they bottled it. Because Liverpool dropped points and they had to play Man City. Which, if Man City had gone to play Real Madrid, battered in the Champions League, so they were wounded and they were coming with that level of vim. At least, I have to show something. Right? So all Arsenal had to do, West Ham, that even Chelsea crowd that we've not won in a hand, crowd, we beat them. West Ham. You can't score West Ham. You can't beat West Ham. Look, at the end of the day, let's not lie to ourselves. And Arsenal fans, they talk more than they... You see, for a club that has not won anything major for like 20 years, they talk as if they are the epitome of winning. Meanwhile, you don't know what it feels like. Chelsea fans are crying and whatever, but Anya, 3 years ago, champions of the universe, Champions League, we're holding it, we're feeling it, we're tasting it, we're smelling it. I said a tweet from an Arsenal fan, how can Chelsea fans and United fans tell Arsenal how to deal with this level? If you want to know how to deal with mediocrity, it's not far, just go 10 years ago. Go 15 years ago. Just check your own history. Read your own Just read your own history. 10, 15 years ago, you are just in the middle of nonsensical things. You are just not winning anything. You don't even know what it means to win the Champions League. They won't win it this time. They won't win it next year. So I don't even know why they are in that competition. They've bottled the Premier League. They've bottled it. And they are out of all the cup competitions too. Like, sometimes I look at them.
They're in the Champions League. Maybe they're going to win the Champions League.
Overwhelmed. I know that they are playing, and I think they are playing PSV Eindhoven. Then after PSV, they are in the same bracket with Real Madrid. And they are doing Martinelli. Masa, that is something funny. You don't go up and about, they take Martinelli. Martinelli. What be the other guy in it? Sterling. I'm laughing like killer. Hey, Masa. We are not playing here. Yeah. Did you see what they did to Man City? Is not good, but did you see what Roma did to Man City? This is what we call football heritage. I saw a tweet this week. They said that I saw Roma play. Roma reminds me of football. That is true. It's not complicated. Shift one or two here. Massa, they have 3 players who like to play from the wings. And some ways, Hammer, they managed to make them a front three. That is clicking. And this is incredible. Vinicius is wobbly. He has not been playing that well. And Mbappe didn't start the season well. So, as for Arsenal, me, I'm not surprised. It's in their nature. It's in their blood. All this play to talk, cho-cho-cho-cho-cho-cho-cho-cho-cho-cho. We know they won't win the Premier League. They are like Spurs. They like to be around it. Hey, they want to shake them about this one. Then they go talk and say, yeah, let me today. There's some. I was here some. That's what they like. They will not win it. Too. They just want to write their name on the wall. I was here some. Hashtag Arsenal. They are not going to win anything. And they've bottled it. Me, I just for want me, to remind the whole world that they spent over £600 million and Liverpool spent zero.
Me, I think I might speak on behalf of Arsenal fans and it's all today.
Because there's nothing to say.
I do feel sorry for them for the fact that they lost their most important attacker, or at least one of their most important attackers in Saka, in such a critical part of the season. They don't really have strikers, but the makeshift strikers they have too, they've also lost both of them. So it's very difficult for me to pile on them too much because to some extent too, I think their problems are also self-created. Because I think that's...
I don't understand. Look at all the money they spent on defenders.
Yeah, that's what I was getting to. So me, I think that if they had at least redirected their defense budget into some quality attackers, for example, I think Osimhen could have done a huge job for them because Osimhen was available for a steal by modern standards in the summer. He went to Galatasaray on a loan. I don't think they even paid a loan fee. I think they're only covering his wages. So, and even if it wasn't for a loan, Napoli were desperate to get rid of him because Conte has gone and done the same thing that he did with Diego Costa, where he made it clear that he no want him. So right now,
you know, for Bayern Madrid, it'll be Conte if he do. It be the owner, no? Or De Laurentiis. It be he talk say he won't sell up. So make Conte no bother use up.
So I feel like even getting to deadline day, a team could have gotten him for like 40 million because at that point they are desperate to sell him. So I think
Chelsea were trying to sign him. They say, hey, yeah, Nkwan, you're almost 80 million.
I'll be the nose of you. So yeah, then they're just basically, I think that Arsenal created this hole for themselves. I feel like if they had gotten an actual striker, the season would have been closer than what we are seeing. And see, I feel hard judging Arteta too much because I feel like we won't see Arteta's peak until we see him with an actual striker. So
I'm sorry,
it's very hard for me to judge him where he is right now.
I'm sorry, hold on. They went to talk to Sesko and his agent.
To this baby thing we talk about. Like if you won't win, you know, Sesko, they can't help you.
Oh no, it'd be cool. But Anya Sesko be actual striker. Then go tell Sesko say if he can, we can compete by Kai Havertz. Now I want you to deep it to Benjamin Sesko. They told him that if he comes a pure proper number 9, you come and compete with Kai Havertz. Yes,
but that's my point about, and this comes to my whole thing about squads, like clubs buying these half-baked players and things. Because in Sesko is a huge prospect, but what has he done in his career so far to go and demand a starting place at a club like Arsenal?
Kai Havertz is not a striker fundamentally, and you need a striker, a box striker, somebody that will be in the box and stick it into the back of the net. Same issue as Chelsea. Me, I've told them this summer, just enter Newcastle, give them 150, take Isak, make it just come landing blue, make it can't bang goals give you. Because at the end of the day,
if he go Chelsea Monday, then you fool.
Why you fool?
I just deliver my dad. You fool.
Bro, you're there 15th. You know, come you're there. You get two strikers. Hoyland, they're sexy. Then be two strikers, you invest 384 billion for them are there. Make them play, give you. We get only one striker. It's okay. We are talking about us. So, anyway, they could have signed Osimhen. In fact, they were the front runners to sign Isak. They declined because they said they don't know how they didn't want to take a punt. And then after they didn't sign Isak, they went to sign Gabi Jesus. No, you see the sense. You don't sign Isaku. You say you don't want to take a punt. Fair enough. So sign an actual striker.
EPL tried and tested.
You see, even Pep was playing him on the wings. If be Arteta will get big brain past Pep. If be Arteta, you get big brain past Pep, you go play him for strike.
I see something with Pep knows.
Oh, Masa. What is he? It be Mirage. It'd be mirage.
Anyway, moving on from Arsenal. So earlier today, I saw this funny tweet from Papa Kwejo. The tweet said, Boehly and Co. have spent $1 billion only to be called unambitious by my people. Meanwhile, some side of my owner just put the whole club on food stamps. It could definitely have been worse. And this is in relation to Man United announcing more cost-cutting earlier today, where, first of all, they said they are going to be cutting about 200 more jobs. And then, in addition, they are also cutting the lunch that staff are entitled to. So if maybe previously they get banco and tilapia and things, right now they give you soup and toast. You know that. Me, I'll start. This one is my club, so me, I'll go start first. Yes, the thing is, so far, Jim Ratcliffe and Ineos are taking some very, very, to put it simply, wicked decisions. Like, they are doing some extremely stingy things. But at the same time, it looks like today they play devil's advocate. At the same time, when you read their statements, and you don't just read their statements, everything that has been said so far, Man United have made losses for 5 years in a row. The Glazers were running the club into bankruptcy. And it seems to me like the only thing to put the club back on the right track is to take some very drastic measures. I do think that the long-term plan by Ineos is to first make the club profitable again. And then from there, try to build from the ground up. So I hope, at least the way I see things, I hope that the plan is that scrap everything, strip the club back to bare bones. When the club is profitable again, then you can start reinstating some of these things little by little. But on the path that the club was on, it doesn't look like anything was sustainable about the way it was being run. It's as simple as that. Like, you can't make losses for 5 years in a row. We are talking about Man United. 5 years in a row, no be joke. Oh, and that time, Man City, they report record revenues and all of these things where they take cook them and books and things. So, like, I think that Ineos is kind of like a good cop, bad cop situation. The Glazers, even like, they were allowing things to just happen anyway, anyhow. Ineos have come in and are using their face to do all the dirty work. So they are going to be hated for a long time because of this. That one, there's no doubt. I can bet that the morale in the club is very, very low at the moment by the staff. Like, right now, if you greet somebody where you know greet and well said, the person will feel slap you. So it's a very difficult situation to be in, but I just think that it is something that it has to be done. Because if it's not done, we are not going to like the look of Man United in another 2-3 years. So yeah, that's just how I see things.
If you go work, wait and tell you, say, then they give you lunch every day. They give you gobe. Monday, gobe. Tuesday, jollof. Wednesday, wachi. Thursday, angwamu. Friday, then say anything you want chop. Yeah, it did. Maybe small pizza, KFC, something like that. Where you come, no, the next, some new money will take over. Where does it write that? All them go serve you. Be free SHS in Quine and Brodo. It will be you. No, tell me the truth. It will be you. If they are cutting costs, then they might as well cut costs for the team as well. Because it's not anything proper BR they are doing on the pitch. It's not anything proper BR that they are doing on the pitch. Look, at the end of the day, you need to cut costs. You need to manage your expenses in a way that you don't make losses or significant amount of losses. By changing lunch, you are not going to save that much. Like, let's be honest. How many
according
jobs
to their
have they
estimates,
cut?
They are going to save £1 million. £1 million.
Oh,
if you do something.
Something where Jim Ratcliffe, they take fuel in plane go.
Little Monaco drops of water. You collect some lunch from here. You collect Wi-Fi from here. You collect water from here. You add up more. Maybe you go fit take do something. You never know.
All the savings and do your stadium still the leak.
Yeah, so then they gather all the coins or take fix the leakage.
I know what. See, Massa. There is me mom dear, as Papa Kwejo said, it could have been worse. Because even though I hate clearly and I'm very angry with Todd Boehly and they are two hideous twins, at the very least, the last time I heard that Chelsea was almost broke was when they banned us and we're trying to sell our club by force. And we didn't have, they blocked our credit card, so we couldn't even hire a plane. Even that one, we took bus, luxury bus.
And even with all of this, people didn't record losses for 5 straight years.
Technically, we did, but Abramovich wrote it off for us. 1.5 billion. He wrote it off. Daddy, come back.
This is why he had to go. But Daddy, see, come here's back. You see, here's the thing. A lot of fans, like when they put out these posts and statements and stuff, you see a lot of fans saying, oh, you the cut costs for lunch and things, but you are paying Casemiro 350k and all of these things. But like, in that situation, yeah, what are you supposed to do? Like, you can't just go and write off the contract and just terminate their contract.
I get it. Too. I get that some people must bear the brunt of it. But the way and manner in which Ineos is doing it is almost inhumane.
What's the nice way to go about it?
Like, for instance, you say no Christmas party. Cool vibe. It'd be okay.
What you want to celebrate Christmas for? What's it to celebrate? We did right now, as of the time they canceled the Christmas party, we did like 13. What you want to celebrate?
That'd be why I say it'd be cool. No problem. You say no bonus for Christmas too. No problem. Fine. Just they pay people. You want to cut because you fired people. Me, the lunch, you know, they are not going to understand give them.
You, your company, they give you lunch.
Then they give me 1 hour lunch break.
Then they give you lunch. Then they give you lunch. Me, I know the former company you work with the time you did Czech Republic. It'd be one of the top companies for the world inside. Then they give me lunch.
Then they give me cash. They say every month, then they sort we out. This be your lunch money. Then I take buy things here, there. The company be small, so they know if we not yet. But we go get there. I believe in the dream. We go get there. But even with that, still then they give bonus and they do this. Then they give private health insurance and they do this and they do that. Things where you go free and enjoy at least. If you know the pay lunch, my lunch break is long enough. However, they want to come. But that's not the point. The point we say, if your company they give master, then why don't they reduce? Why don't they change the this and say instead of giving them lunch, they'll give them like coupons or cash or something like that. You want to serve people a benkwai, free SHS a benkwai, then bread, 3-day-old bread. Something that if they enter Lidl or Aldi, £3, they go buy, take, go chop. Why you know give them £5 a day lunch? Just give them £5. They make them take enter Lidl, then Aldi, then my cousins, take buy simple things. Or when they take go Subway, go buy some small, 6 foot or something. Just chop, then enjoy them, my body.
The bottom line for me is that the club is 15th. The club is broke. Whatever needs to be done, I'll judge them after 3 years. If after 3 years, all of this is not working, all of this is not bearing fruit, then fine. But for now, all I see the club's books are in a terrible state.
Fine, that's the fine. Clubs, that's why.
On the sporting side, we are in a terrible state.
Fine, like, but every decision you make must be spot on. That's why you can't chase somebody for 6 months and sack them after 5 months. The money they spent on Dan Ashworth to chase him, to buy him out of his contract, to pay him and to sack him. That money, you know, the money they used to go and hire Vivel for January. The money they used to go and hire, you kind of saying, they used to keep Baldy, where they sack him, where they for pay him, where they sack him. Massa. All these footballing decisions, it costs millions. It's not the millions they've lost, you know. It's not the lunch they will change that will give them back that money. If you want to save money, the first thing you must do is make the right decisions. Or you have to stick to your decisions. Even if you're like, yeah, I make big mistake. Because you want to save money, you have to either stick with the decision or just pretend like you don't even see your decision nowhere. But if you make wrong decisions, then you lose more money. How much money did they pay Dan Ashworth to sack him? Like maybe 2-3 million.
4.1 million.
Thank you. 4.1 million. Is it more than the money they want to save from lunch? No, it's not. Justice for my United workers that they've not yet sacked. Because clearly they might sack them too.
So moving on, we are going to talk about something we haven't talked about in a long time, and that is Syria. So, first of all, I was just going to talk about the Serie A title race, but earlier last week, there was also another slight racismo issue to do with Syria, and that had to do with Atlanta, Gasperini, and Ademola Lookman. So Lookman took a penalty.
That was no reason. Let's speak the truth and shame the devil. He's not. Maybe the manager didn't say, like, he wasn't politically correct in the way he said it. But truth is one. The guy, he's not good at a penalty. Let's talk about your hideous boy way go AC Milan and how the whole world is waking up.
We know the idea of
João Felix and the actual talent on the pitch be two divergent opinions.
We don't get time for that. We can't talk about Serie A title race. So basically, right now, three teams are separated by 3 points. Inter in first place, Napoli in second place, and Atlanta in third place. Just 3 points separating all three teams. First of all, let me just say that for all the talk about which league is the most competitive league, I think Serie A has a huge shout for being the most competitive league for at least the past 5 years. Because it depends on the criteria you use to determine which league is the most competitive. Some people might say the league that is the most difficult to win. Some people might say the league that has the biggest teams. Everybody and their criteria. But at least for the face of it, I think Serie A, for the past 5 years, they've produced 5 different winners. I might be wrong. But in the past five years, we've seen Juve winning it. We've seen AC Milan winning it. We've seen Inter winning it. We've seen Napoli win it. I don't know if I've gone through all of them.
And then Inter again.
I think Inter again. Yeah, so we've seen 4 winners in 5 years or something. At least in terms of balance, it's not like EPL where Man City win 4 in a row. La Liga, at least we haven't had consecutive winners in a long time, but it's usually the same 3 teams. Basically Serie A, the title race is looking very, very heated. My money has been on Napoli for the past... For the first few months, basically because Conte has this knack for, if maybe the first, in the first 5 months, if Conte did on top, usually nobody they shift them again. But right now it looks like then they wobble small, Inter can take top spot. So what do you think is going to happen? Who do you think is going to win Serie A?
I think Inter will win it just because they are just the best team in Serie A. Facts are sacred. Antonio Conte's Napoli are good. I'm not saying they are not good. They are good. But they are a Conte team. That means they will work hard. They will run you off the pitch and things. But I just think, like, if you look at even the goal difference, it's like 10 or 11. The difference between Inter and Napoli is like 10 goals. Usually Conte's side is characterized by not conceding and scoring 2-3, 2-3, 1-2, 3, 1-2, 3. Then they move forward. But this season, I've not even really been able to... They've not been that consistent, as I suppose.
I think they've scored 48 goals. I think they've scored 48 goals and conceded about 21.
Yeah, so, they've got 42 and conceded 21. Meanwhile, Inter have scored 59 and conceded 24. Atlanta has also scored 59 and conceded 26. So even Atlanta self is maybe 12 goals more than Conte's side. So if Conte's side draw and Atlanta score away and go them up front, goal difference and points, they're ahead of them. I think in the end, it's just Simone Inzaghi is just too good a manager. That guy is just too good. And I just think in the end, Inter will win. Albert or not, Albert might really like this and it's annoying me that I'm on his side. But facts are sacred. That I think that at the end of the day, I don't think this is the first time I'm writing out Conte, unfortunately. I think Inter will win the Serie A. This one, they've come on top. Unless Articulator.
I think Inter will win. I think I've seen Inter wobble in games where you wouldn't usually expect them to wobble. And Napoli, I don't know, there's just this grit about them naturally being a Conte team that even though the thing that I think might work against them is the amount of quality that they lost over the season, because losing Osimhen, replacing him with Lukaku right now is probably a downgrade on Osimhen. He's probably more of a creator in this Napoli team than a scorer. And then to add to that, they also lost Kvaratskhelia in January and didn't properly replace him. They were planning on replacing him with Garnacho, even though that one too. So I don't know how that would have gone, but I think that quality they lost might work against them long term. Because the thing about not being a team that scores many goals is that you need some sort of individual brilliance that Kvaratskhelia would bring you. And not replacing him means that in those games where it's neck and neck, nil-nil, you're not going to have that person bailing you out. So it's something that might work against them long term. But I think, I don't know, it's very hard for me. Maybe because I put money on Napoli to win the league. So that, my heart's no one let go. But yeah, I still think that Napoli might still sneak it. I don't know. Maybe it might be more of hope than common sense. But yeah, that's just how I see it.
I don't think they'll win it, but that's fine.
So anyway, we come to the end of this episode. In case you haven't done this already, please subscribe to us on our different platforms, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. In case I'm sure you guys have noticed that lately we've been pushing the YouTube much more than we push the Apple and Spotify. And the simple reason is that the YouTube, that is where the money is. So we won't make shift a lot of people to the YouTube
side. We don't get money to do things.
Yeah, and we've been around for like 9 seasons. We've only been really active on our YouTube for the past year. So naturally, like, the bulk of our subscribers and listeners are all on Spotify, Apple. Like, it's like a ratio of maybe 20 to 1. So right now, we try to build a YouTube from scratch. So that's why we've been pushing the YouTube a lot. So it really helps when you share the YouTube links, you tweet about the YouTube, you comment in our YouTube. That all helps to push the YouTube algorithm to more people. So yeah, it's something that is really important to us. So at the very least, share the links, like the episode, subscribe, all of that. It will help a lot. And then yeah, the Spotify, Apple is still there. So for those who still like to listen purely on audio, I know a lot of people like to just drive and listen. It's very important to them. So yeah, still subscribe to those ones. Give us a 5-star rating if you can. Follow us on our social media pages, Twitter, Instagram, ATW Podcast GCR. On TikTok, it's After the Whistle. We've come to the end of this episode. Charlie, guys, thank you once again for joining us on this one. Vangelda, thank you. The past few episodes, we've not had a full house, but we are hoping this upcoming episode that we have, we'll be able to get at least Kraken Curry back. So, Charlie, thank you once again. And as always, ATW dominates the conversation.